Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. In a moment, Governor Terry Branstad will deliver his Condition of the State address. Thanks to Iowa Public Television, we will bring you the speech in its entirety. Following the speech, we'll have analysis from Iowa Public Radio's Statehouse Bureau Chief Joyce Russell and David Peterson, political science professor and interim director of the Harkin Institute of Public Policy at Iowa State University. We'd love to hear your reaction as well. You can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We now go to Iowa Public Television and Dean Borg.
Members of the House and Senate convening now in joint session, awaiting Governor Terry Branstad's 2013 Condition of the State Address. I'm Dean Borg. Governor Branstad is very familiar with speeches in this chamber, first serving here as a representative from Winnebago County, and as governor delivering 17 Condition of the State Addresses during 5 terms as Iowa's chief executive. Today's speech is 18th. Comes as he begins his 3rd year of his 5th term as governor, assessing the condition of Iowa and outlining initiatives he'd like legislators to consider during the next 100 days or so. You're seeing on the screen now, and as you listen, you're seeing the convening of the session of the Iowa General Assembly and the guests that are gathered in the House of Representatives chamber. We've seen the Iowa Court of Appeals, the Supreme Court, the governor and lieutenant governor's families. Governor Branstad now on the lectern, and he's being introduced by Senate President Pam Yoakum of Dubuque.
Message through the 2013 session of the 85th General Assembly.
Madam Lieutenant Governor, Madam President, Mr. Speaker, leaders, justices, judges, legislators, elected officials, distinguished guests, family, friends, and fellow Iowans, it is an honor and a privilege to serve as your governor. I thank God each and every day for this opportunity that has been provided to me to serve you and all the people of Iowa. I stand before you once again to report on the condition of our state and to outline a focused agenda and a biennial budget. I'm pleased to report that we've made great progress. Our state's balanced budget is built on the principles of stability and predictability. It is a shining example of the good work that we have done together. In the areas of job creation and economic development, I'd put our efforts to successfully attract new jobs and market both here at home and across the country and across the world against efforts of any state. And yet in other areas, an honest assessment would suggest that we still have much work to do. In particular, I reference our ongoing efforts to reduce property taxes and adopt a truly transformational educational system. Iowans are entering a period of unprecedented opportunity, and we in this chamber have it within our grasp to help foster this state's greatest economic expansion and quality of life improvement in modern history. Perhaps the heaviest lift of the last 2 years was restoring budgeting practices that insisted on strict fiscal discipline. I insisted on a 2-year budget, and we measured all tax and spending decisions through the lens of a 5-year budget projection. And today, I'm once again submitting a biennial budget for fiscal years 2014 and 2015 and ask you to commit to join me in making this sound budgeting practice a reality so that those most dependent on our vital services that we can deliver to them, and they can trust that our promises made are promises kept. As a result of the tough choices that we made, Iowa is currently in the best financial position in our state's long and proud history. This is not about good luck, and it didn't just happen. We blazed a new path by making hard choices, and we must never return to the irresponsible budgeting practices of the past. Our successes do not end with the state budget. We've completely redesigned our state's economic development efforts through the creation of the new Iowa Economic Development Authority, the Iowa Innovation Council, and the Iowa Partnership for Economic Progress. These efforts have paid big dividends, leading to the two largest private capital investments in Iowa history, with the construction of new fertilizer plants in Lee and Woodbury counties. All total, in the 2 years since this administration took office, our efforts have landed more than $5.3 billion in capital investments in Iowa. These investments translate into jobs for thousands of Iowans and higher incomes for so many Iowa families. When I stood before you just 2 years ago, Iowa's unemployment rate was over 6%. Today, our unemployment rate is at 4.9%, the lowest it's been in 4 years. In addition, through the efforts of Lieutenant Governor Reynolds and University of Northern Iowa President Ben Allen, we launched the Governor's Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math, or STEM, initiative. This initiative is already enhancing learning opportunities for Iowa children by putting outstanding STEM programs in more than 800 site locations. But our work in education reform has not gone far enough. We were reminded yet again last month when a new study showed that our students' ranking on vocabulary tests had slipped to mediocrity. Let me ask you this very hard question. When did we decide that middle of the pack was good enough when it came to Iowa's children's education? Did we really make that decision, or did we simply let it happen through inaction? Let's take the same serious approach we took to solving our budget problems and reshaping our economic development efforts to making our schools the best in the world. The quality of our children's education impacts everything we do to improve our state. Let's focus on our future and our children's future. For too many years, young people have looked to the coasts in search of career opportunities, be it the financial industry prospects in the east or the tech sector in the west, and Iowa was relegated to the status some disparagingly called flyover country. Today, we're living a different story. Within the past year, Iowa has gotten a serious look by more than 1.3 billion residents of China, many of whom are familiar with our state as a result of the special relationship we have with their incoming president. It was just a year ago that I invited China's next president, Xi Jinping, to visit our state. As you know, he accepted my invitation. and many of you were in attendance at the dinner we hosted right here in the state capitol in his honor. Iowa's emerging role in the world economy really struck home to me at the dinner that night that we hosted for Vice President Xi and his delegation. He said Iowa was the first place in the United States that he ever visited. And then he said, in reference to the special people that he met in Iowa on that trip, "To me, you are America." The next day, fittingly, at the World Food Prize building, our state signed an agreement with China to provide more than $4.3 billion in soybeans. Iowa no longer just feeds the world, it feeds the world economy. Vice President Xi and his delegation's visit made it clear Iowa is flyover country no more. Today, Iowa produced avionics are installed in aircraft in Brazil. Iowa tractor technology plows the ground in Russia. And Iowa lighting illuminates growth around the world. Innovation is propelling Iowa forward, both at home and abroad. The coming decades can be ours if we're bold enough to make these incredible opportunities our new Iowa reality. This year, I bring to you a bold action plan focusing specifically on three goals. First, job creation and expanding opportunities for Iowa families. Second, improving educational opportunities for Iowa children. Third, improving the health of all of our citizens. These are opportunities that not only benefit us, but they will reshape the future for our children and grandchildren. This is our opportunity. This is our Iowa. In the past 2 years, Iowa has experienced some significant successes. Family incomes in Iowa have grown the second highest rate of any state in the nation at nearly 7%, and our economy has created 100,000 jobs. These are nice success stories, but they are only the first chapters in a book of accomplishments that we are still writing. There is much more to do because this is our opportunity. This is our Iowa. When we consider strategies for stimulating our economy to encourage job creation, we need to look at ways to lower the cost of doing business in this state. This will improve our ability to compete, putting more dollars in the hands of Iowa consumers to purchase Iowa goods and services. Both of these objectives can be accomplished by returning a significant portion of our state's budget surplus to the taxpayers who made that surplus possible in the first place. In this budget, I am proposing a significant plan to reform our property tax system to make it competitive and to provide nearly $400 million in actual property tax relief to Iowa's hardworking taxpayers. The principles guiding our property tax plan are simple. Permanent property tax relief, no shift of the tax burden between classes of property, and property tax reduction for all classes of property. Our plan has three significant components. First, the budget fully funds the homestead tax credit and the elderly and disabled tax credit for fiscal year 2014. That's with an additional $33 million. Last year, as you know, we made a down payment on this funding gap, and this year we're going to close that gap once and for all. Second, I propose legislation to permanently change the school aid formula so that allowable growth will be replaced with 100% state aid. No longer will the school aid formula trigger automatic increases in local property taxes. Third, we will bring forward legislation designed to stop any future tax shifts between classes of property by tying the classes together in one combined rollback, correcting a mistake that was made when the original rollback formula was implemented back in the 1970s. This legislation will take the current 4% cap on valuation growth for residential property and agricultural land and cut it in half to 2% and apply it to all classes of property. If left unchecked, our current law will allow property taxes to grow by over $2 billion in the next 8 years, and half the increase will fall on Iowa homeowners. I find that prospect terrifying, and I ask you to work with me to ensure that property taxpayers are protected from this unprecedented property tax increase. My plan permanently reduces commercial and industrial values, tax values, by 20% over a four-year period and provides direct funding to local governments to replace 100% of the property tax revenue. My biennial budget provides resources to make this possible, and my five-year budget projection accounts for nearly $400 million in direct property tax relief. Small businesses in Iowa have paid some of the highest property taxes in the nation for far too long. These high taxes mean less money for businesses to hire new employees or provide salary increases for current employees. Businesses pay the taxes, yes, but it is the middle-class families who truly feel the pain. And it is those same middle-class families who will reap the benefits of a competitive property tax structure that makes it easier for us to recruit, retain, and grow those companies that create new jobs that Iowa families need. Our plan is to reform and reduce property taxes, is an investment in Iowa families and small business, but not at the expense of local government. In addition to lowering and reforming the property taxes, I'm committed to enhancing the skills of Iowa's workforce as a critical investment in meeting the needs of Iowa state of our job creators over the next decade. To that end, our administration has embarked on an ambitious effort called Skilled Iowa to bring new workforce skills to our unemployed, underemployed, and those simply seeking better long-term careers. The impetus of the Skilled Iowa initiative came from conversations I had with Iowans like Bill Knapp and Jim County and Teresa Whalert on how we can bridge the gap, the skills gap, that so many employers have articulated as an impediment to bringing more high-quality jobs to Iowa. Our Skilled Iowa initiative builds on the STEM program to ensure workers in Iowa get the skills they need to fill the high-paying jobs of today and tomorrow. It is simply unacceptable to me to hear time and time again as I go through Iowa's 99 counties that employers are ready to hire, but our workers aren't prepared with the necessary skill set to fill these jobs. Skilled Iowa is helping to change this and bring new hope to Iowans. We already have 2,400 Iowa businesses signed up for Skilled Iowa, and 18,000 Iowans have used Skilled Iowa resources to certify their skills with a National Career Readiness Certificate. My hope is to grow this program and work with new employers seeking skilled workforce while serving more Iowans. Through lower property taxes and more highly skilled workforce, in addition to our successful economic development efforts, we have the opportunity to stimulate the state's economy and provide our citizens with the high-quality careers that they truly deserve. This is our opportunity. This is our Iowa. And speaking of our Iowa, today, in the balconies of this chamber, are school children from around our state. Today, they get the opportunity to watch democracy in action. I hope they will leave this building with the knowledge that each of us here shares a commitment to making Iowa a better place for them and their family. In today's knowledge-based global economy, youngsters must finish high school, ready for college or career training. This is an economic and a moral imperative. We cannot continue to be complacent. Iowa's eighth graders led the nation in math back in 1992. Now we rank 25th, not because our scores have slipped, but because other states' scores, ours have been stagnant while other states have improved. We are shortchanging some of our best students, too. Just 8% of Iowa eighth graders scored at the advanced level on the math and science national test, compared to 15% in Massachusetts, which is now number one in the nation in education. Among Iowa's high school class of 2012 who went directly to a community college, more than 36% had to enroll in a remedial class. Let me be perfectly clear to the teachers who are here today and the teachers in classrooms across Iowa. You are not the problem. Iowa is fortunate to have many dedicated educators who work incredibly hard. I know this from visiting many schools all across the state, and because my daughter, Allison, teaches in Waukee, and the Lieutenant Governor's daughter, Jessica, teaches in Creston. Unfortunately, our teachers are stuck in a system designed for the 20th century. We must work together to transform our schools for the 21st century. Let's establish new roles for top teachers who will provide instructional leadership alongside principals to better meet the needs of every student. That's why elevating the teaching profession is at the heart of our 2013 education plan. There are three key pieces. The centerpiece of our plan is to revitalize Iowa schools with a new teacher leadership and compensation structure. Relying on teacher leadership is a hallmark of high-performing school systems around our country and around the world. Iowa has embraced paying teachers in innovative ways before. Back in 2001, the Iowa legislature passed, and Governor Vilsack signed a law establishing a career ladder. They understood back then that we were losing teachers who found few ways to advance professionally without leaving the classroom. But unfortunately, it was never funded. Establishing new career pathways promises to do more than just raise student achievement. It will offer outstanding teachers new professional opportunities. Our plan honors teachers by recognizing how vitally important they are and provides five career pathways that teachers may pursue. Educators will be able to advance their careers in the classroom through these numerous pathways. Our plan gives teachers the opportunity to make a meaningful impact as leaders in their schools while giving our children a better education. The end result for Iowa's children will be better performance in the classroom and better opportunities in their future. This kind of reform does come with significant cost, but it's a cost I believe to be a true investment in educational excellence. I'm recommending a $160 million state investment in this new teacher compensation model to keep our best performing teachers in the classroom throughout their entire careers. And I believe that we should resolve the issue of what we're collectively willing to invest in achievement-driven reform before we spend a minute discussing additional resources to support our existing educational system. The second piece of our education reform plan, the Teach Iowa Initiative, addresses another key problem: recruiting top students to become teachers. The simple truth is we must attract more of our best students into the teaching profession. Today, I propose boosting beginning minimum teacher salaries from $28,000 to $35,000 a year, a 25% increase to help reduce the amount of financial sacrifice that high-achieving students must make in order to choose to enter the teaching profession. Additionally, I propose a significant expansion of a program administered by the Iowa College Student Aid Commission. Our Teach Iowa initiative attempts to attract more top students to teaching by offering tuition reimbursement for highly talented new graduates who teach in Iowa schools for 5 years. Priority will be placed on students majoring in higher-to-higher subjects like math and science, but awards will go to future teachers in other majors as well. And the Teach Iowa initiative includes a pilot to expand the traditional one-semester student teaching to a year-long apprenticeship in partner schools. Stronger clinical experiences stand to better prepare future teachers. The third piece of our plan to revitalize education in Iowa is a new college or career-ready seal that high school students may earn in addition to the diploma. We want business and education leaders to set high standards for the seals. Beginning next year, students will have the option at the state's expense of taking a college entrance or workforce readiness test. Our program will make it clear what it means to be college or career ready based on real-world expectations from Iowa business and education leaders. When Iowa can brag about having the best educated workforce anywhere, more businesses will locate and expand here. As a result, more young people will stay in Iowa because they can land good jobs that pay well and allow them to enjoy a great quality of life. Our children deserve our best because this is our opportunity. This is our Iowa. Lastly, I wish to speak to you about an issue that stands at the heart of our Iowa quality of life and is so personally important to me. That issue is the health and well-being of each and every Iowan, and my desire to make Iowa the healthiest state in the nation. As a former president of one of Iowa's medical teaching universities, I marveled at the progress that modern medicine has made to save lives and lengthen lives. Yet while we're living longer lives, I have to ask, are we living better lives? The obesity epidemic and the onset of more and more chronic diseases stretches the capacity of our medical system to meet our needs and stretches the ability of our taxpayers to support programs like Medicaid. This is why we've embarked on the ambitious public-private partnership to make Iowa the healthiest state in the nation. We have an opportunity to make Iowa communities vibrant by ensuring they have the health care professionals they need to keep their residents healthy. And why shouldn't doctors choose to live and work in Iowa? Yet, in the past decade, Iowa has fallen further and further behind in terms of active physicians per 100,000 residents. Sure, we're behind states like Massachusetts and Michigan, but we're also trailing neighboring rural states like South Dakota and Nebraska. Iowa is 46th in the nation in internal medicine, 47th in pediatric, 48th in psychiatry, and last in both emergency medicine and obstetrics and gynecology. We're home to two great medical schools, the University of Iowa and Des Moines University. In fact, we have over 1,500 medical students currently enrolled in these institutions, but we're not doing enough to keep them here after graduation. Today, I'm proposing three initiatives intended to keep Iowa and Iowans healthy by keeping more doctors in our communities. First, my budget proposes $2 million to support medical residency programs in Iowa. Last year, we came together and created a public-private partnership to help doctors serving rural areas repay their costly loans. My second proposal provides $2 million to launch the Rural Physician Loan Repayment Program and expand it to include OBGYN and emergency medicine doctors as well as primary care physicians. My third proposal is for us to come together and pass a certificate of merit law and a cap on non-economic damages. Keeping in doctors in Iowa requires that we make our state a place that is friendly to those who practice medicine. The first oath taken by a doctor is to do no harm. And no group of people is more committed to protecting patients than Iowa doctors. Frivolous lawsuits are harming our ability to recruit and retain doctors. A certificate of merit simply requires a medical expert review the facts of a case when a lawsuit is filed to verify that the injuries could have come from substandard care. This lets real claims move forward and takes the weight of bad claims off the healthcare and judicial systems. These are sensible reforms. We know that they work because the states that have these laws have more doctors and lower insurance costs than we do. It is our responsibility, mine and yours, to work together to offer these generational gifts: the best education, a thriving marketplace where startups are competing to create jobs for all Iowans, coupled with responsible and measured leadership from each of us to promote and enhance what is right with Iowa and to reach our full potential. This is our opportunity. This is our Iowa. It is the promise of a good people who demand a good government and expect the men and women serving in that government to put aside their differences and come together to make good public policy. It is the promise of providing hardworking parents the ability to give their children a world-class education. It is the promise of a way of life that provides opportunities to thrive here in the heartland of America. The condition of our state is strong and growing stronger every day. We stand at a place in history where many other states are burdened with way too much debt and looming uncertainty, while Iowa is well positioned for unprecedented growth. While some states across this country are choking opportunities right out of their states through overtaxation and overregulation, Iowa is like a lighthouse, beaming a bright light of opportunity to those seeking a better life within our borders. Let us turn the page and write a new chapter in Iowa's history, a chapter that reflects how a people of good character and common purpose, who were genuinely committed to working together, provided dynamic solutions that led to the best time in our state's long and proud history. A chapter that will hail the unprecedented growth of job opportunities and rise in family incomes for all Iowans. A chapter that celebrates the fact that every Iowa child has access to the best education in the world. A chapter that affirms how Iowans' quality of life reached new heights as our citizens became the healthiest in the United States. This is the chapter of our history that you and I, each and every one of us in this chamber, have the opportunity to write. Let's write it well. Let's write it together. This is our opportunity. This is our Iowa. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless the people of Iowa.
Governor Terry Branstad delivering his 18th condition of the state address. I'm Charity Nebbe, and with me today is Joyce Russell, Iowa Public Radio's State House Bureau Chief. Hello, Joyce.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you for being here. And also joining us is David Peterson, political science professor and interim director of the Harkin Institute of Public Policy at Iowa State University. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you both so much for being here today. And we also want to invite you to join the conversation as well. If you've been listening to the governor's speech this morning, we'd love to hear your questions, your reaction to the things that you've heard the governor say today. And Joyce, I want to start with the general tone of the speech, something that I noticed. He had this theme going throughout the speech, Our Opportunity, Our Iowa. And there were a number of applause lines that seemed to be applause lines that didn't receive applause. did just from your perspective, did you notice that and feel that maybe this fell a little flat?
I don't know that I'd say it fell a little flat, but I did notice that there were fewer instances where people jumped in and applauded. I'm not sure what to make of that.
All right. Well, we'll probably find out more about that as the day goes on, and particularly as the legislative session goes on. Dave, was there anything that surprised you in this speech today?
Not a whole lot. I mean, Governor Branstad had made it pretty clear what he was going to say ahead of time. And I think that might have been part of the absence of applause, was that there wasn't a whole lot unexpected. And in part, I think it was also that you know, these are good themes. You know, these are a healthy citizenry, you know, a better tax system and better education. And everyone's sort of in favor of that. And so
You don't think it Charity, necessarily said anything.
Charity, I jump in and say I think there were fewer specifics in this speech than in past years. The governor's staff gave a budget briefing earlier this morning, and sometimes in the past, more of those numbers, more of those specifics on the budget ended up in the speech, and they didn't this year. So that might be behind the less activity by the crowd today.
All right. Well, let's break down the speech a little bit and look at some of the different themes that the governor hit today. And of course, economic development is something that he talked quite a lot about. One of the things that he said early on in the speech is that Iowa is currently in the best financial position in our state's long and proud history. By what terms do you think that the governor was judging that? Joyce, do you have some insight on that?
No, I mean, the governor and his staff have been stressing for several weeks, actually, how fiscally sound the state is, how sound our budgeting practices are, and now they're basing their budget, their 5-year budget, on tapping some of these resources that they've saved as a result of their sound budgeting practices. I had never heard that as far as the history of the state. I'm not sure how you would figure that. I don't know how you would figure what other years, you know, and Iowa's been around a long time. So I think that statement would be a little bit hard to back up.
Dave, does that strike you as a little bit of hyperbole?
Well, yeah. I mean, and I was curious about that as well, trying to figure out exactly what the criteria is. It struck me as that's one of those applause lines that fell flat. It's the, you know, sort of the rock band, you know, Des Moines audiences are the best in the world sort of line. And I don't exactly know what it means either. I mean, we're in really good shape. And I think some of it's comparative as well to a lot of other states. You know, as a generally speaking, a lot of states have turned the corner. You know, California has announced that they've finally figured out their mess. But you know, we are in very good shape. We've got a stable system. We've got a surplus. And things do look quite bright.
Well, and the governor goes on to talk about that. I know that we have a very strong budget surplus. He mentioned that our unemployment rate is at 4.9%, which is the lowest it's been in over 4 years, not the lowest that it's been in the entire history of our of our proud state, but in the last 4 years, certainly. He wanted to focus a lot today and did focus a lot today on his tax policies. And he spent quite a bit of time talking about property taxes and the changes that he'd like to make, not just in individual property taxes, but also in business property taxes as well. And one of the interesting things that he said was with school funding, he wants to take away allowable growth, the school finance formula, and replace allowable growth by 100% state aid. Joyce, what does that mean?
Well, the school aid formula was devised a number of decades back, and it was designed to really make Iowa's school finance system constitutional. I mean, all around the country you see challenges, inequities among rich schools and poor schools, rich districts and poor districts. And so the school finance formula was designed to make sure that didn't happen, but it only went so far. Up to 85% of a school's budget You take what property tax money you have in your area, and the state supplements that so that everybody's getting the same, and that's up to 85%. But it's only up to 85%. The rest of that varies. You know, the property tax burden hits some districts harder than others, and every time the state comes in and says, okay, school district budgets can grow by this amount, then property taxes automatically go up. And he wants to just get rid of that and have the state pay to whatever growth the schools need. And he has hinted, I haven't heard this again today, but he's hinted in the past that there might be some kind of inflationary formula so everybody gets a 2% increase based on inflation, but he would no longer be tied to property taxes. And that's part of his overall program for equalizing and reducing property taxes.
All right. And another thing that he said in talking about property taxes, he says, our plan to reform and reduce property taxes is an investment in Iowa families and small businesses, but not at the expense of Iowa's local governments. Dave, do you have any insight on how that can be? Because clearly there would be lost revenue to local governments.
I mean, I think this is this is always the tricky part with when the state government is changing property taxes, because most of the property taxes go to fund local governments. And so when the state imposes changes on the property tax structure, it has a real impact on what local governments can do. And I think some of this is what he's trying to do is the example is with school aid, right, is that you take away the flexibility and the ability of the local school districts to raise property taxes through these allowable growth, but then you fill in the gaps at the state level. And so the state provides money that's raised by sales tax or income tax to be able to backfill what's been lost due to the property tax reform. I think that's what he's hinting at, that's how it's going to work.
So, well, and that's what's radically different this year and what makes me think that they could actually have a stab at cutting property taxes this year is that they are saying they will make local governments whole. They will use any changes before that they made in the property, like if you reduce commercial property taxes, how are local governments going to handle that? They're now saying they will take the budget surplus that we have over the next 5 years and use that to make sure that local governments don't lose any of their revenue. That's a huge change over what they were proposing in the past. And also, they are making a more conservative cut in commercial property taxes as a result. They're hoping to reduce commercial property taxes by 20%. In the last year, their proposal was 40%. And they said in their budget briefing this morning, they're reducing that because they are going to have the state come in and make local governments whole, and that's all that the state can afford.
Yesterday, of course, with the legislative session being convened, we heard a lot of people talking about bipartisanship this year. We always hear that on the first day. Joyce, do you get a feel for is there maybe more momentum, people planning to work together, willing to work together going into this legislative session?
Oh, I don't really see anything different except that it does, as I've said, it does look like there's at least a chance now that they are going to come together on this property tax, and that would be a huge bipartisan achievement. I should point out that the real sticking point might be that part of the governor's plan is to limit property tax growth in the future to 2% a year. Local governments aren't going to like that. There was a nice feeling of bipartisanship yesterday. I was struck by the governor including this non-economic damages cap on medical malpractice. That's going to be a very very partisan thing. I was kind of surprised to even hear that in the governor's agenda. That's going to be a hard one to pass.
Well, in introducing that, he seemed to make a statement that this, because of malpractice suits, this is one of the major reasons that we don't have as many doctors as we need in Iowa. I'm guessing he could get a lot of argument about that.
I'm sure that he will. I don't know. I haven't seen the figures on that, but I'm sure there'll be another. I mean, I'm sure opponents of that would come up with their own numbers to counter that. Nevertheless, I mean, it is a significant issue, the shortage of medical health professionals.
And
whether or not malpractice has anything to do with it.
Dave, I want to return to this question of bipartisanship. We're not getting a lot of that on the national level right now, that feeling of parties willing to work together. Do you think we have some bipartisan momentum in Iowa at the moment?
Yeah, I think we're better positioned than the federal government. You know, a lot of the lack of bipartisanship in the federal government has to do with the increasing polarization within Congress. I don't think our legislature is nearly as polarized. Part of it is the party structure, right? The what we call the Hastert rule, that for anything to pass, it has to have a majority of the majority party to be on the floor. You know, parties across the country do that in the state legislature, but we're not as stuck with it as we are as the Republican Party in the House, for instance. Is. And then, you know, this is the other thing that sort of struck me about the governor's speech is that really, with the exception of the malpractice reform bit, most of it was, I mean, it's to the right of center, but it was relatively moderate. I mean, this isn't, you know, get rid of teacher unions like we've seen in other states or decertify the unions. The property tax reform has moved to the middle from where it was last year. The first two main points for the health initiative aren't really, you know, hardcore liberal or hardcore conservative issues or proposals. They're sort of in the middle. And I think this is, you know, part of what Governor Branstad is. I have the sense that, you know, he's a moderate Republican. And given the divided legislature, he seems to be well positioned to be able to try to bring both sides together. And we might actually get something done this term.
I would echo that as using the term relatively moderate on the education proposals. Keep in mind that one of the main pieces of his education proposal is a teacher salary and promotion schedule, where instead of being promoted by seniority or the number of degrees you have, you are promoted over time based on your responsibilities in the school, starting with mentor and then advanced and master, and I can't remember what the top one is. But keep in mind, a very, very similar thing was passed back in 2001 under Governor Vilsack, and a divided legislature. It may have been an all Republican legislature, but it was never funded, and that's the centerpiece of his education agenda, which was almost identical to what a Democratic governor signed more than 10 years ago. There are much more controversial things that he could have put in it. I mentioned in my reporting yesterday that many Republicans favor a merit pay for teachers or pay based on your students' performance. None of that is in the governor's plan. I will say that one of the hard things that they are kind of kicking the can down the road on, and that is evaluating teachers and looking at student performance, maybe even test scores, in conducting teacher evaluations. His education plan has that in it, but it's in effect studying it for the next 3 years. And so he's kind of eased that off the table, probably, possibly, to make it more likely that his education plan will get through this year.
Well, and he certainly did have a conciliatory tone toward teachers and saying,
absolutely,
right, you are not the problem in education in Iowa. And I want to dig more into the education part of the speech. I want to mention also that you can join our conversation. If you listen to the governor's speech this morning and you have some reflections you'd like to share or some questions you'd like to ask, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm talking with Iowa Public Radio State House Bureau Chief Joyce Russell, and also Dave Peterson, political science professor and interim director of the Harkin Institute of Public Policy at Iowa State University. One of the things that I saw in this education part of the speech that was interesting is the fact that we're planning to, as the state of Iowa, apparently we're planning to pay for a college entrance exam for any student who wants to take one.
Yeah, that struck me as a bit odd. You know, actually, that's one of the things that you know, if we actually did that, the perverse results would be that our average test score would probably go down because a lot of the students who would – I mean, just math, right? The students who would take it – take
right,
the exam if it was paid for,
right.
It would be the students who would score lower, which would actually lower our average test scores. It's not that it's a, it would make that a sort of a less accurate measure of how our college-bound students are actually doing, but it on paper would look bad.
Well, this is actually – go ahead, Terry.
Oh, no, I was going to say it might give more students the opportunity to go to college, though, I assume.
Yeah, absolutely. No. And so that part of it's great. But just, you know, the sort of – if we're deathly concerned about our – you know, how our test scores look compared to vis-a-vis other states, it would –
it could have a negative impact. But he also mentioned this workforce readiness test. Do we know anything about that, Joyce?
Well, that's been under construction for a while. It's part of the governor's skilled workforce initiative. And actually what he's proposing this year as far as tests for high school graduates is a moderation from what he was proposing last year. Last year he was saying everybody would take a college entrance exam. Now, as I understand it, I think it's going to be voluntary, and it would be either a college entrance exam or this skilled workforce exam. Both of those initiatives would be aimed at trying to better assess how Iowa high school students are doing, I believe, and also kind of give people, especially with a skilled workforce one, give them a kind of a credential for entering the workforce rather than going to college. This is a much more limited thing than he was proposing last year.
And while the education reforms that he's talking about seem to be toned down perhaps a little bit from last year and more bipartisan, there was something in the speech that came up yesterday as well that is pretty hard-handed. He says, and I believe we should resolve the issue of what we are collectively willing to invest in achievement-driven reform before we spend 1 minute discussing additional resources to support our existing educational system. So he's saying we're putting school funding on hold until we get this resolved?
Mm-hmm. That's what he's saying. Even though Iowa law requires, of course, this has been disregarded in the past, but Iowa law requires the legislature to come in and set, here's this term again, allowable growth for the next fiscal year within the first 30 days of the session. And this is so schools can plan their budgets and know how much money to expect. And so there was a bipartisan reaction against that yesterday. Both Republicans and Democrats were saying, no, wait a minute. I mean, this school reform, this could take the whole session. But, you know, they've passed 0% allowable growth in the past, so it won't be the first time if schools don't find out that they're going to get a raise right away. But it is kind of a hard-handed thing. But it kind of goes along with the governor's philosophy, and that is he believes that the current structure of education and teacher compensation is broken. And he doesn't want to put any more money into it until it's fixed. I mean, that's kind of the guiding principle there. But he's going to get some pushback from both parties.
We heard yesterday House Majority Leader Linda Upmeyer saying that the budget surplus that we have should not be used for ongoing expenses. Are the governor and Republican legislative leaders at odds on that point?
I don't. Did you just ask me if the Democrats and Republicans agree?
No. If the governor and Republican legislative leaders are at odds about that, because he talked about a lot of spending in this bill.
A lot of spending, but he will say that they are not using. They are that his budget will not go beyond what the state is bringing in. It may look like he's spending a lot of money, but the education initiative and the property tax initiative, those are both spread out over 5 years. And he's taking great pains to say that the surplus that we have now is going to be like apportioned out over the next 5 years. And at the end of that 5 years, state revenues will have grown enough that it will be self-sustaining by that time. So they're very clear to, they're very adamant in pointing out that they won't be spending any more than the state is taking in.
All right. We've been looking around on Twitter at some of the other reactions to the speech today. Senator Jack Hatch tweeted that Governor Branstad's failure to mention improving mental health reform or health care makes his claim of the healthiest state a hollow promise. And in that part where he talked about having the healthiest states, he focused primarily on keeping physicians in the state of Iowa. Dave, what's your response to that?
You know, I was actually quite surprised by the statistics the governor used. I didn't know we were that bad at the proportion of the number of doctors we had. And I think the commentator is right that, you know, having more doctors is part of the solution. But, you know, if folks can't get access to the medical care, that's a real problem. You know, and I know that, you know, the Democrats in the legislature have talked about expanding access to Medicaid for Iowans as part of what they'd like to see as part of the surplus. And that was absent in even addressing, you know, we're not going to do that, or he doesn't think we should do that. That was not really addressed. You know, in terms of mental health, yeah, that wasn't there either.
And we also heard this from on Twitter from James Lynch of the Cedar Rapids Gazette. This may be the quietest condition of the state I can remember in more than a decade. No one's sleeping, but not reacting either. So we weren't the only people to notice the lack of applause at some of those clear applause lines. Joyce, what comes next in the next week, couple of weeks, now that the legislature is in session? What is on the agenda?
Well, the governor... We just heard the bare outlines of his budget in his address and in this briefing this morning, but he'll be fleshing that out with more details on spending, a $6-point-something billion budget, some 4-point-something growth in the budget for next year. So the legislative committees will start going over that budget with a fine-tooth comb. And if the governor is serious about not approving any raises for schools until education reform happens, it's possible they could get right to work and
that pushes that up on the agenda. Yeah,
exactly.
And Dave, what will you be watching for as these issues advance?
No, man, I think the education reform and the ordering of the education reform versus the investment in education is the key thing that the legislature is going to have to figure out how it's going to manage. Is it going to do what the governor wants? Is it going to go its own way? And are the House and the Senate going to, you know, make the same choice? And so that seems to be the sort of key thing, at least at the start of the session for me.
David Peterson, thank you so much.
Yep, thank you.
David Peterson, political science professor and interim director of the Harkin Institute of Public Policy at Iowa State University. Joyce Russell, thank you.
Thank you, Charity.
Joyce Russell, Iowa Public Radio State House Bureau Chief. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had production assistance today from Caitlin Fry, technical support from Jason Burns in Ames today. You can get in touch with us anytime. We'd love to hear your reaction to things you've heard on Talk of Iowa. We'd love to hear your suggestions for things you'd like to hear on Talk of Iowa. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, if you've just started running, tune in. We're going to talk about those early weeks as you try to become a runner, and we'll also talk about some developments in running technique as well. That's coming up tomorrow. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.